The etched portrait of Adam Smith hung in my hallway, inside profile, as though to be stamped on the face of a coin. I wrote economic reports for a living, and my firm used somebody similar as our logo. But Adam Smith's real portrait occupied pride of place in my home.
Deceptively spacious. That's the ambiguous phrase we use. Here we have the hallway. It leads to the main living room. That rather distinguished portrait up there, I'm told, is the owner's great-grandfather or some other ancestor. Let's go through, shall we?
My only link with Adam Smith was a fondness for his ideas. I loved his theory that the free market was governed by an invisible hand. The self-regulating invisible hand that intervened in the market to match supply and demand. The invisible fist that forces the economy to work.
This house is relatively new on the books, and the owner is willing to negotiate on all reasonable offers. So contact me if you're interested. We can arrange another viewing, or perhaps you might put in a starting bid.
Smith's invisible hand deals an invisible punch to people who oversupply. It could be houses, it could be horses. His hand places invisible fingers at the throat of surplus demand. Adam Smith was an architect of balance, the Isaac Newton of the market, the mascot of my trade. I wrote reports for a living. Economics, finance, business for the most part. As a teen, I wrote yarns. Stuff about seafaring and press gangs. Tales of marooning and drowning. Of being lashed to the mast, swallowed by whales, and struck down by St. Vitus' dance. I have no time for escapist stories now. But I still like the idea of anonymous. The writer of fables and limericks, the mind behind nursery rhymes, slim pamphlets, and anarchic social critiques. Who was this Anon? A masked mutineer or a skulking coward? Just a writer who wanted to stay unknown? Anon was a supplier operating under a curious brand. I redeemed the flatness of my job by connecting the invisible hand of the market with that author called Anon. The firm's logo was an 18th century bewigged scribe's face. It amused me to think it was Adam Smith. Up until 2008, I'd been turning out 10 to 15 reports a year, all told, working for Pagerist, writing, editing, or client handling. It was skilled work, lucrative, but lagging behind the legal profession and the salaries of most chief executives, I still find our fees were exorbitant. But we gave the business clients what they wanted, the final draft they could approve or amend. We were a service provider. We catered to the client and the demands of the market. Whatever they wanted our reports to find, we found. Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was a showing of my house today. Estate agents. Overlords of a leech-like sector. No sooner have you purchased a place than they're cajoling you to sell.
You have to see beyond their leech-like leaflets.
They carry photographs of the agents that are bigger than the houses they're trying to shift.
The market is holding up. You'll be sold soon.
Are we all ready?
Oh, sure. Fire away. What do you have?
Building blocks, future trends in the construction sector, Keel Hall, fishing for a future, and wood for the trees, forestry and green shoots.
Yes. where are we with these?
Well, my client is okay with the blocks and the fish, but there is a problem with the trees, Magritte.
Yes, the client thinks our estimates of acreage are too conservative. They lag their ideal expectations. Mm.
Did they supply a clear understanding of the figures they envisage?
Yeah, I have a PDF and database of sapling coverage for each county.
Well, that's probably okay. So, you know what to do, Magritte. Revise upwards, give them what they want. And Maslov, how are we getting on with the fish, did you say?
Swimmingly. Yes. The executive summary got the go-ahead. Wayne is hammering out the methodology. He's slow, but eager to learn. I will no doubt have to retrofit a plausible conceptualization. We've ditched the graphs, we've recast the variables, we're almost in business. The press releases are ready for sign-off. Friday week, we go to print.
And so it went in Pagerist. It was emblematic of the times that we got away with a cruddy name like that. Pagerist. Professionals playing on plagiarism. We had the neck to build Pagerist into a trusted brand. Our skilled team of writers and researchers included introverted fugitives from the mass media. We had a fair share of defectors and cynics who had tired of hearing about the freedom of the press. These people knew firsthand how consultants like us fed the media a diet of reports and quarterly statements and tried to shape the news. Maslov and Magritte were among our finest defectors. But the wordcraft got subsumed into talk of delivery dates, deliberate industry source leaks, and report launches. Most of our work went not into writing, but negotiating with the clients, wooing them, getting inside their skin, gauging what exactly it was they wanted us to do. It worked to our lucrative advantage. Each year, as quangos spawned sub-quangos, they came back for more. I had started at Pagerist some years before. I was allocated to Maslov under their mentoring program. He did his best to draw on his rich tapestry of experience.
Here, let me remind you what the client wants. The message is always positive. The market always infinite. Spot the upward trend in the figures and amplify it. That's your job. Predict progress as far into the future as you think is plausible. Throw in some vague words to cover yourself, to cover us all. We are a team in here, tight and as thick as thieves. We sink or swim together. I don't believe that either, but let's pretend we do.
He showed me how to pump up my work, how to push mangy signs of an industry's progress into a paradigm shift way beyond all previous patterns of profit. He showed me that the economical part of what we did also applied to the truth. He was proficient in basic grammar, but anything beyond that foxed him. That irked me. His idea of humour was to affect the accent of City Hardshaw. That irked me too. His 1970s degree from a vast campus had carried him a surprising distance. But he taught me what I needed to know.
Credit the client with some intelligence, but not too much. Throw in some doubt, some vague threats. The insatiable industrial demands of China and the growing middle class in the larger Indian cities. These are useful staples. Make reference to the world shortage of steel, of finite resources. Emphasize how situations need to be sustainable, how conditions may change. Repeat certain phrases at key points in the text. Did you know I coined going forward into the future? Well, I think I did. The world of commerce, along with TV and radio, they all liked that one. And were parroting it back to me in no time at all.
Maslov was a man of rote learning and little insight. A creature of stock phrases whom someone must have once told he was clever. He appealed to many of the semi-state CEOs and decision makers. They thought he was a character. Well, it was easy to see why. They were all made out of the same mediocre ingredients that were going to bring the nation to its knees. Maslow schooled me in client liaison, in report structuring, in scheduling and budgeting, in managing deadlines and delays.
We start with the executive summary. That's what you write first. From that, the rest of the report flows backwards. It's a type of reverse engineering. We formulate our conclusions to suit the health service agency, the local authority, the planning boards. We listen and we learn. It's about their needs. It's about their wants. And then we create a report that justifies what they want us to say. The clients pay good money. They deserve our best service.
The fraudulent activity he exposed behind our professionalism never shocked me. I had always expected the worst. We wrote upbeat reports that flew in the face of common sense. And no one said stop. All was well. There was a steady line of semi-state bodies and faltering quangos queuing for our services. Yeah. Maslow liked to work at an old typewriter and hand the pages to the secretary.
Computerize that now for us, love,
he would say, before he disappeared off to lunch with a client. Often, he never came back. I had taken to going for long lunches myself. Often, I would meet Hemlock, a pal from the old days, when we had both struggled to find work. Only Hemlock had a sack of ideas of his own and was slow to embrace the opportunities of the boom.
Did you catch the morning news?
No.
Oh, well, you missed nothing.
Too busy tending my hunger pangs. Too busy dragging myself out of my pit to come in here to you, pal. Sunlight burns my skin.
Oh, Hemlock, your days on the dole have distorted you. You eat too much tinned food, you know. Not enough red meat. You are a jobless city dweller. Why not flee for the countryside and set yourself up as a peasant?
After a few years, I could relaunch myself. Come back up to Dublin as part of a migrant horde seeking to take over through process of soil creep.
Soil creeps. I like it. Nice and offensive.
Soil creeps. People from the provinces with mud in their brains.
You know, Maslow in the office wouldn't get any of this. He wouldn't get you, Hemlock. He wouldn't get past your nickname. He speaks and writes in clichés. But he has survived for 20 years.
You have a lot of ground to make up on him. Are you going to get me another beer?
Hmm?
Oversalted city food makes me thirsty.
3 p.m. Oh, screw it, Friday. I'm done. Yes, yes.
Two more of these bad boys. Thanks. What about this Margaret? What is she like?
Too smart for the job, but sly. And too young to see the hoax we perpetrate. She seems to go along with the client as king line. And doesn't see that what we do is actually corrupt. What she doesn't know doesn't hurt her. She's as much a product of our reports as a producer of them.
Luckily, they have a strong outside force like you, Nelson.
Hmm.
Tell me, they wouldn't understand how you were nicknamed for believing you could never be knocked off your pillar.
Listen, small brain. I am going to speak slowly and clearly for you. I am a professional. I wrestle with moral dilemmas and then buy you drink out of the workplace proceeds.
But are you going to get me in? You even going to try? I've come unstuck. I need a job, a career. Things are booming all around me. I want my bite of the bounty bar.
It would make you ill and slowly kill you.
You reckon? And not working is good for me.
Oh, there are things you could do well there, but... You wouldn't want to, Hemlock. Better things await. You'd be just another invisible hand on a page, another invisible finger in the company pie.
The The top brass in Pagerist liked me. Within 18 months, I was commanding those jokers Maslov and Magritte. The economy was booming, and we feasted on its needs. We divided industry into spurious sectors. We wrote reports for think tanks, for regulators. We created an apolitical vocabulary of stakeholders and third parties, symbiotic supply chain points, and medium-term outlooks. On April Fool's Day, we promoted ourselves on our website with a pretend press release about a report called E-Tender is the E-Knight, Irish E-Commerce, E-Government and E-Gads. The fake story got picked up by commercial radio stations and the national broadcaster. We were criticised by rival consultancies and reprimanded by some sort of truth on the airwaves commissioner. How could we fabricate reports, they asked. All too easily, really. The controversy died down. Ultimately, it did us a favour. Even more people knew who we were. The economy was racing full steam ahead, and we raced with it. Our findings turned up in newspaper headlines and top stories on the broadcast news.
Our report today shows that the sector is growing at a rate of 10% per annum, double the forecast of this time last year. It is estimated that an additional 10,000 jobs were created in the first quarter of the year.
Phone-in shows became bristling debate clubs as our positive reports drew outrage from lone wolves who felt the boom had passed them by. Our reports fueled hope among some half-wits of how great the country had become. For once and for all, we were an independent nation. Nothing could hold us back. That was the refrain. Our reports facilitated a world of positivity. We fed the dreams of Boers with political ambitions as they confidently talked up the economy. We somehow also created ducking schools for naysayers. The market was no longer a jungle. We had landscaped it into a garden of Eden. The firm sought new recruits. We got a bonus if we brought anyone in. All the time, Hemlock kicked at my heels.
So when do I start, Nelson? Have you pushed me at all inside? Talked me up and flashed my CV? I can fake it better than any of those idiot graduates you snap up. The ones with the unquestioning faith in the economy. 23-year-olds in 150-euro shirts. Ones accepting the multiple times their salary mortgages.
Hemlock was at a loose end. His left-wing PhD had faltered after 7 years of near completion, and he languished on the dole, bathing in Marx and Engels.
The perfect work-leisure balance of an unemployed economist. Well, let me paint you a picture. I like to get up early, so I do. Say noon, is that early enough? To listen to some relaxing music. Let's say The Cramps. No, let's say The Damned. On a good day, I manage to even get up earlier, say 11 a.m. to maximise my listening pleasure by thus squeezing in an entire extra hour spent listening to some relaxing music. Let's say again, for the sake of argument, The Cramps. No, again, let's say The Damned. Devoid of dependent wife or child, I am fortunate to be able to live this way, letting nobody down other than my hapless self.
And that might have been useful in the office, but I just didn't want him around. Neither as a witness to what I did, nor as an accomplice. He was a pal. He would have given the job his best shot, but some base ideology he pretended he was ready to ditch would have got the better of him. It would have forced him out eventually. He had kept his thinking clear, and I did not want to muddy it. Even if, for all his talk of Marx, he was prepared to sell it down the Swanee. Anyway, he was more useful to me in the margins of my life. I treated him to Michelin-starred expense meals and long Friday lunches. Hemlock was my sounding board, my running mate. I pushed him towards the charity sector and NGOs, telling him that they could use a man of his skills. I kept him as an outsider, as a distraction. I used him as a conduit for my career. This graphic clearly shows us the inverse relationship between the variables. You have the strong positives on this axis and the weak positives there. These shady characters over here are what I call the notional eroders. But, as you can see, the range of their reach is limited. Bad news for those bad boys, I am delighted to say. And as you see, situation-wise, Q1 through to Q4, it's all good. Yes?
Forgive me for asking this, but how long do you think we have before such a scenario runs out and takes a turn for the worse? This surge, it cannot go on forever, monsieur.
Hear, hear.
Well, you'll need to answer that for yourself, Marcel. I am just analysing the facts and presenting some findings. Now, look at the system. Look at your supply. Look at demand. The system is sealed. It is a black box. Do we need to know what is in that box? No. Open that box, and a boxing glove on a spring jumps out. Empirical evidence, Marcel, is overrated. It is contaminated in the act of collection by the filthy and very visible hands of researchers. The market has its own intelligence. It directs us all with its invisible hand.
But we all remember times of confidence before things collapse. In my country we do. Just as we take each turn for the better, won't we exhaust the route? Won't the road run out?
2 years ago, maybe even 12 months ago, I would have been forced to agree with you. But let's observe. Let us deal with the filthy evidence. You are free to project pessimism into the scenario. But it would be scientifically suspect to mold an outcome with low expectations. God knows what darker times have done to many a national psyche. Are we to carry that cross forever?
What about the risk of optimism, naïf? Is that not a far worse danger?
If there was danger, would we be here today, talking like this? Talking up your industry, your trade, and your commerce? We are trying to see the way forward. That is our job. If you want a written guarantee, you have come to the wrong place. But for an analysis of what is most likely around the corner, I stand over this report. The economy was booming, all right. People were buying houses and cars. I had two of each and a stack of savings. Money was burning a hole in my tailored pocket. I was looking at swapping the second pad for a luxury apartment in Lithuania, but the estate agent was taking time to shift it. A matter of weeks, she said. Perhaps you might lower the price. That Saturday, I went around to Mandrake to collect my car. Oh, it was cursed, but I loved it.
Bit of trouble with that, the paintwork, but Czeslaw matched it as best he could. And the handbrake is always going to be a problem.
Handbrake. Remember to connect that word with Mandrake, for that's where this mechanic gets his name. Oh, I want solutions, Mandrake. What do I owe you?
Pour yourself an industrial mug of Swarfiga there, and I'll be back with me paperwork.
Mandrake gave me rough fractional discounts for cash. Slicing off a fifth, a quarter, a third of the price, he gave me a real economy in which to move, a world away from my reports. I drove this Rover 2000, a car that made a big impact on me as a child, with its back wheel half enclosed. There was always something wrong with mine, but that I found reassuring. A machine that malfunctioned, that ground to a human halt. I write reports telling people everything is fine, that the economic fundamentals are all solid. And you tell me my car is a crate.
Lads like you need to be grounded. Things break. You can make them work again, but they break.
Thanks for the lecture. I do love coming here to your back lane workshop for these parables. It gives me a focus for the weekend to stand around cursing and laughing with a grease monkey like you, you know?
I am the brains of this operation, my friend. See my workers? For them, the grease monkey rolls. You wouldn't last a day. The secret to this job is to bark orders with rough abandon. Yeah, Peach! Not that spanner. The other one. You sold the house yet?
No. Demand seems sluggish. How's business here?
Taken over nicely. Not as busy as we were, but still, all good. Czeslaw! That dent is still clearly visible. Christoph, you have to work the buckle harder, or you won't be the only one out of a job. You bang with this mallet. You smooth it like that. But be careful. I've seen people break their hand.
Mandrake liked all this. He had a mechanical intellect. There was a sheen of empathy, forgiveness and understanding of frailty. He portrayed people as objects which worked or malfunctioned, things to be fixed when broken and replaced when beyond repair. We could have wasted time mapping out ways to make our lives better, but those lives were already pretty good, if only we'd known it. There was a therapy in all this for me, of course, a way out, a mechanical valve for release. And the best thing was the conversation fizzled and fired. We said awful things about people. None of it was written down. That I reserved for the increasingly fake, upbeat reports. It was a male world, oil and grime. It revolved around a certain regard for women, and beneath the bonnet, a certain disregard. I'd taken 4 cars through Mandrake's workshop over the last 5 years. Each was mapped against a broken relationship. Placille had been here a few years before I met her. She passed herself off as a photographer and had a small exhibition or two. She cycled everywhere with a half-baked political belief in the wheel and said she loved the city. 6 months in, and I reckoned we were done.
This one is of you coming out of the office. You did not know I was taking it, and you look business type. Aggressive in a bad day at work way. But also sort of stupid.
I had to accept the premise that she had talent. But technology had turned cameras into easy reporting tools. Digitally enhanced, we have all turned into photographers who load better quality snapshots up on the web. She had notions. She was capturing the excesses of the boom. Maybe that was what really grated on me.
Here I put your face on the body of a stock exchange broker. Suits you. Here it is one of Putin's favorite oligarchs. Suits you more. You are breaking what you think is big deal. 3, maybe 4 months before they take your money and send you off to Siberia, a no-boom land where you learn lessons from the lack of opportunity.
She had hundreds of Facebook friends all applauding each other's Flickr-posted files. Her work found some vague and infinite internet audience. In her dealings with me, she had the odious nature of a perfectionist. And perfection is the enemy of good. She bullied circumstance with her diminutive presence. When she was nice, she was very, very nice. When she was awful, she was prize-winning. Hemlock, I knew since school. He liked to go against the grain and went off and got strange qualifications.
You'll find there was no course here that covered my subject.
Years in England had toughened him.
Puny polytechnic. Poisoned me with sociology. We were being primed for community jobs with Lambeth Council.
A sackload of heavy ideas had always taken their toll on him. But we stayed friends and sparring partners. He eventually stopped asking me to get him into Pagerist and played to his strengths through progressive left-wing magazines and websites. He started writing a type of socio-cultural blog. Having failed to get ahead, he tried to expose the economy's flaws. Well, while it was hardly going to reward him handsomely, he got by. He appeared less the soothsayer and more the saboteur. He found several like minds and set up some type of group calling for change. They had a program on community radio, beaming out their thoughts between blasts of the cramps and the damned. I used him as fuel for my own propulsion. When I was stuck, all I had to do was to take his ideas and perform a 180-degree turn and then twist them into my reports. Towards the end, the clients would accept any old crap. They believed in themselves and the economy so deeply, blind faith was the cornerstone. Hemlock helped me jazz up my findings with negative drama. I was always in the market for notional eroders, and for notional eroders, Hemlock was my man.
Hume, Marx, Malthus, even Adam Smith. We need to think in classical terms, not your showbiz spin. Get back to basics. Don't just give people what they want.
Supply and demand. The economy must be crying out for economics if you're working.
Like you, I hear China screaming for steel. I hear Ukraine calling for coal.
Hemlock came from even further to the right side of the tracks than I did. But now he was overcome by insight and empathy. Spurned by the economy, he reverted to his PhD thinking. He pushed the sociology he had studied deeper and deeper into everything.
Economics is a part of the society it studies. Economists are part of the economy, people with the power to abuse. You, pal, are a bit part player in the ideological superstructure.
Keep going, young egghead. Get it all out. You'll feel better.
Your reports formulate the very ideas the system needs to keep going. You assure the shaky edifice it is economically viable. Your fake analysis is faking up the country.
What's the minimum wage for eggheads like you?
You clearly don't read my column.
I wouldn't be alone there, pal. Your economy is a theory, not a real terrain. Out there in that real economy, a disappointing offer had appeared from my house. Within 2 weeks, it was withdrawn. A while passed before the next offer. That was 50K lower. But it too was withdrawn. The economy was stalling. Late one Saturday afternoon, when my car was banged up in handbrake mandrakes with a leaking rad, I took a walk across the city. People were lured out by the illusion of an early summer in the air. Taxis were dropping gangs of payday lads into town. I needed to clear my head from the working week, so I walked, imagining myself a stoic tangent to the unfolding night. The smell of the brewery washed over the city, an honest wave of roasting malt or burnished hops. Or whatever. It was the brewery, the city's anchor, older than me and Pagerist, older than the new economy, centuries under its belt. My route veered off the normal course. Urban wastelands had come back. There were faded for sale signs and broken hoardings. There was the feeling of an anniversary hanging in the air. Could have been my birthday, or a few years on, maybe from a breakup. I was going to leave Pagerist. That was all I knew. I had lost a decade of my life in the pursuit of money. A decade in which I had denied behaving deplorably. I had offered solutions in my reports, but those solutions were part of the problem. I emerged with somewhere to live and some money set aside, but I couldn't shake the feeling of having helped steer the ship onto the rocks. Oh, I am not going to go all moral now, but I felt contrite. I needed to be forgiven. I wandered all night drinking beers in a half-known bars. And as I staggered back home, I ran into trouble.
Okay there, bud.
Got a cigarette? Got any cash?
I got mugged, lost a tooth, burst a rib. Twisted the event. I now see my assailants not as predictable thugs, but as younger people and older people. There are always three of them. At the worst point, they are frail senior citizens with dappled skin against the knuckles they use to strike me. They're not so invisible hands, raining down blows as they curse me for their pension pots being plundered. Passers-by not seeing. No one cared. It's several years now since I went my own way. I still write reports, but I write them now for charities. I advise on fundraising pitches and write policy and ethics documents. I think my heart is in it. The city has grown emptier. Many people I can't stand have emigrated, thank God. There's better value across the board, food, drink and dwellings. I held on to my second house and let it for a reduced rent. Adam Smith still stares down from the wall. There are not enough jobs. The supply of labour exceeds demand. Banking is in disgrace and politics attempts to create change. Some of my old clients are fugitives from justice. The popular imagination has them holed up in the Algarve. And when things get tough each year around budget day, you can hear the fugitives laugh. Society is still fixated on reports. They cover rest homes, church scandals, deaths of children in care. Some reports revisit the period I documented and weigh up what's called the infrastructure of consensus. Pagerist was an agent of this infrastructure. I have been contacted by some of the idiot graduates we took on and then laid off. They are now doing idiot PhDs on the dangers of groupthink during the boom. Easy revisionism is all the rage. The notional eroders are no longer notional. They star as entities linked to the balances of payment, exchange value deficits, national debt, repayment burdens, healthcare cuts, pension time bombs, whatever you want. But Hemlock has really come into his own. He crawled up from his not-for-profit activism and became a pundit. Turn your radio dial around now and you'll probably find him. The economy fell in his favour and people can't get enough of his narrative of gloom and decay. I could do gloom and decay, but it isn't my thing. It lacks entertainment value. I like the tale of success and unstoppable monetary momentum. I like the trappings of wealth, the dominant narrative of riches, the yarn about a land of treasure. Oh, Hemlock is everywhere. Conferences, TV, newspapers, the web. He says we have further to fall. It will take decades to fix the damage. Last week I got Mandrake to sell my car for a couple of K. It would be apt if Hemlock bought it. But Hemlock does not drive. He uses public transport. But he takes taxis to television stations to broadcast words like freefall. He was keynote speaker at a recent summer school. The bastard had his laugh by inviting me as a representative from what he calls the voluntary sector. It was in some rambling mansion in the Midlands whose owners hoped to make money from its tenuous link to the master of the market's invisible hand.
Welcome to the inaugural Adam Smith Summer School. We will be looking at the complex interplay between supply and demand in the context of the Irish economy. Later, I will invite on stage an old friend who will share his insights into the positive reports of the boom and later soft landing reports that helped hammer us deeper into the ground. It got us here. We are where we are. Where did you get to, Nelson? A lot of disappointed punters.
Supply meets not demand today, Hemlock. I was ashamed, embarrassed, but hungry mainly, and made straight here for the food tent.
Well, it's Spartan fare. Fancy some lobster?
Oh, won't say no.
A glass of Sancerre.
Yes. Go on.
Who funds these bloody summer schools anyway?
Later, I watched him preach from the stage, capturing the pulse of the people. Later still, I saw him spew his guts up around the back of the mansion. It might have been nerves. It might have been the seafood. Maybe Hemlock lacked the stomach for his new podium role. My last report is not redacted. We'll call it the Invisible Hand Report. Ladies and gentlemen, you know the score. I will bring you through the main findings. A question and answer session will not follow. That was some decade of dinner parties. Nuff de pap, oat medoc, and someone always brings the Barolo. There were racks of lamb, sequin tops, competing flesh. The decade flew by so quickly we neglected to reproduce. Emerging the far side, frayed, farcical, and denying middle age. There's ghost estates and unsold homes, rotted decking still south-facing towards the reluctant sun. Is that your name in Stubbs' Gazette? They say economists have predicted 10 out of the last 5 recessions. But we have moved on from economics. This is a graphic capture of culture, a political economy of rebirth. The reports are milestones that tell us how far we have come. There is an infinity left to go. All the redacted truths will be compiled, eventually. Hemlock does his best, but breaks down to vomit behind a crumbling mansion. Oh, we all loved the good times. They were better for us all. Graph 1 shows our moral bankruptcy. Table 2 ranks our dishonesty. Graph 3 shows emigration, hospital closures, mortgage default, unemployment, and depression. Figure 4. That's waiting lists for invasive surgical procedures. Figure 5, fatalities from single vehicle road accidents in rural regions. Was someone asleep at the wheel? Not me. I only wrote the reports.